Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Capitals and the Boston Bruins.
Caps in their own end. Nate Schmidt ahead to Marcus Johansson. Now to Backstrom. Is the line change complete? But the Capitals jumping in. It's Backstrom down along the right side. Looking in front. He scores! Nicklas Backstrom with a game-winning goal for Washington. Good morning. Good afternoon. And good night, Boston. The Capitals saw a three-goal lead evaporate. They win it in overtime. Final score, 4-3.
I believe that's the Capitals radio network. Great win for Washington last night. All right. That's our play-by-play call of the day. It's still to come. Craig Meyer, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And now let's bring in Audrey Snyder, DK Sports. Audrey, welcome back. Great to have you with us. Now that you've had a little bit of time here to absorb what's happened over the last 10 weeks, what are your thoughts?
You know, I still don't know if I have the right words for it. I'm still kind of searching for it. But, yeah, definitely a week to kind of catch your breath and make my apartment look like someone occasionally lives here, at least. During this run, Steve, it's just a remarkable turnaround. I mean, the way this team started off 2-2, and then the offense just comes to life. And not only does it come to life, but then it just explodes and becomes one of the most explosive offenses in the country pretty much overnight. And then, of course, the defense, despite all the injuries, I mean, once they got past that hurdle and after the Michigan game, I mean, this team has just been lights out, really, in all three phases when you look at it. Of course, what kicker Tyler Davis has accomplished this year, Blake Gillikin, the punter has been a big part of it, too. So, really, just they've become such a complete team, which is crazy to think after, you know, starting off 2-2. So, still not totally sure what exactly happened. I mean, you look at the numbers, they jump off the page, especially on offense. We saw a little more of the tempos and all those kinds of things. But even against, you know, against Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game, it's just felt like during this stretch, this team has never been out of a game. And despite what the score might have been, they've always found a way to rally. And that's really just been a remarkable run. And then, of course, it'll continue next month in Pasadena.
Got a glimpse last year in the Taxslayer Bowl in the second half of Trace McSorley. What did you see in his development this year?
You know, to me, Trace was a guy that it seems crazy now, but remember the big things in the spring were his height and his arm strength. Well, clearly it's pretty obvious that neither of those two actually proved to be problematic. I mean, with as many deep shots as they've taken, they've totally been fine. But to me, maybe the surprise is just kind of how quickly he's taken over this offense. You know, you always expect for the transition period there's going to be some growing pains. But really, since about the third, fourth week of the season, he's been fantastic. And so once they got the turnovers eliminated early on, some of the exchange issues or snapping issues, rather, you know, he's really gotten hold of this offense, and his mobility has just opened up everything for these guys. And that's been huge. And we saw the success in high school. We saw the statistics, all the numbers, those kinds of things. But the fact that it translated so quickly to me was probably the biggest thing. I mean, you see what he's doing, and I thought these are numbers that, you know, we wouldn't see around here. And, you know, maybe you'd see this kind of progress, the offense looking this good at the end of next year. But the fact that it happened, you know, midway through this year to me just really speaks to how quickly he's learned. And talking to Tommy Stevens, of course, in the locker room Saturday night after Penn State won the Big Ten title, I asked Tommy, you know, at what point did you know that Trace was this good or going to be this good? And he laughed and, of course, then pointed back to the bowl game. So, absolutely, what everybody saw last January, it just carried over, which is pretty crazy, you know, because that's a big jump to make, and he really has commanded this offense.
Linebackers go out, eventually get back. Offensive tackles go out. Now, obviously, you have to have the personnel to back this up. But what did you see in the resourcefulness of the coaching staff to make create some moving parts to help this get to this point?
Absolutely. Definitely a credit to the coaching staff. I mean, Steve, if you would have asked me a year ago who Brandon Smith is, honestly, I'm not sure if I would have been able to give you an answer other than, like, you've heard the name before on the roster. And, of course, this is, you know, we spend our time dissecting this roster and position groups and all these things. And when we do all these spring and preseason previews, Brandon Smith wasn't a guy that we were talking about. I mean, that's just how crazy this season was. Same thing with Chaz Wright. And you look at the offensive tackles. Wasn't a guy who was really on anybody's radar. So, you know, yes, having the depth is certainly a big part of it, but I think it really speaks to what's happening behind the scenes here. You know, we hear so much about the strength and conditioning program. We get a chance to talk to Dwight Gault every now and again and see how they're working. But really, I mean, they have so many guys that they can just keep rotating in there that it leads you to believe that everything behind the scenes has to be going pretty well, that you're able to develop this much depth. I mean, another, I think, great example of that is Connor McGovern. I mean, this is a kid who just around this time last year was finishing up high school, getting ready to get to Penn State. The fact that he was physically able to, you know, play right away, plus being able to hold up and play well, you know, that's remarkable. Yes, he's a talented kid, but yes, they're also doing everything in training and preparation to, you know, have him be successful. So I think you're just seeing every aspect of this program clicking right now, which really makes you wonder about the future, Steve, and just, you know, how bright it is with how many of these young guys they have coming back.
They win the Big Ten championship. They end up fifth overall. That also means they get the Rose Bowl out of this. What is your initial thought on the matchup in Pasadena?
Explosive, exciting. I mean, these are two of the hottest teams right now, if not the two hottest in the country. And so, you know, you look at that, and I know initially it sounded like some fans, you know, were a little bit upset about, you know, not making a playoff, and I get that, but the fact that they're going to the Rose Bowl is incredible, especially given the way this season played out and the way it started after, you know, 2-2. And really, I think this sets them up so well for the future. It's such a building block when you look at it. And, I mean, they're going to have their hands full. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster is a really talented wide receiver, so I'm curious to see kind of what they do there. And, of course, Penn State, I mean, you have about a month to prepare for it, but talking with James Franklin on Sunday, he said that, you know, it really doesn't work like that. Of course, the staff is out recruiting right now, and, you know, it'll end up being maybe like 3 to 5, maybe 7-day bonus period of actually working on the game.
Right.
But it's all about getting back to player development. And, I mean, that's what's gotten them to this point. So it's, you know what, continue to do everything behind the scenes with Dwight Gault, getting these guys healthy, getting them ready. And then worry about the matchup, you know, the closer it gets to it.
Right, exactly. The college football playoff, they selected the four teams. What was your opinion on the job the committee did?
You know, I think they got it right. And you look at it, and it's the two-loss thing with Penn State. I mean, that's what people are going to gripe about. But, I mean, if they don't lose to Pitt, then this is a team that, of course, then gets in. But I'll also make the argument, Steve, that if that game against Pitt doesn't happen, if the loss to Michigan doesn't happen, I don't think we see this season play out the way it does for Penn State. I mean, the players talk so many times about the lessons they learned in those defeats, and we really saw that, you know, prove to be true. I mean, the fact that against Pitt they learned just how explosive they were. Against Michigan they learned that they weren't doing enough preparation on their own as players to hang with these elite teams. So to their credit, they ran with it and fixed it. So, you know, I think the committee got it right, but you do wonder now with future scheduling, how is that going to impact? And I think because this season was such a surprise for everybody, you know, surrounding Penn State, that people will point to the non-conference and say, oh, well, you know, they should just play cupcakes and that's it. Well, I mean, this was a team last year that had a much easier schedule because they were supposed to be the hardest hit from sanctions. So if you take everything into account, this was supposed to be Penn State's first year off of the bowl ban if everything would have held up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, you take all that into account, and scheduling's done it, you know, so far in advance that it's really tough to kind of peg these things. So, of course, you know, you're going to have Pitt on here for 3 more years, and then shortly after that they're going to play West Virginia in the non-conference schedule. So, you know, a little bit down the road, maybe we'll see if that changes, but everything's done so far in advance that I think, you know, the committee got this one right when looking at the picture of these five teams.
Well, I mean, when you look at it, you know, it's the safe way out. When you have four teams, one with no losses and the other three with one, well, there's no other one-loss team out there. I mean, right. So, I mean, you know, you do take the safe route. The only bad message they sent to me in this whole thing is you can't have Rutgers be your signature non-conference win.
Right.
And that's Washington.
It, absolutely, Steve. I think it just goes back to the value of, you know, what is the benefit of winning the title game? I mean, you look at from an Ohio State perspective, it's like essentially they got another extra week off by staying at home, getting healthy, not having to, you know, go through the banging risk, injury risk, defeat, to then come out and play. So, yeah, definitely sends a weird message for sure. And I think we're going to maybe see some athletic directors adjust a little bit down the road here, because your goal is to compete for national championships. And so what can you do to put your team in the best position possible? So I can see it from both sides. You know, you want to play the best teams mm-hmm. to see where you stack up, but you also want to be able to get to the finish line. So no doubt about it, it's going to be quite the debate.
One other debate. Are you comfortable with four, which many are, or do you think that eight is a distinct possibility?
You know, selfishly, as a fan of football, you love the drama of it, and I think with eight teams, you would totally get that. And, I mean, you look at March Madness, everybody tunes in because you want to see that Cinderella. Well, had the field been expanded to eight this year, I mean, then we would have been able to see what Penn State, what USC, you know, what they're really like, because there is something, I think, to be said about being the hot hand and being that hot team at the right time. I mean, how many times have we seen it in the NFL where you get the six seed come in there, they're, you know, 10-6, go on a run and win Super Bowl? I mean, why limit it to four? I mean, I think it certainly would take a while for the NCAA to get to this, for the playoff committee to expand it. But I'd be in favor. I think it'd be fun. And you look at the viewership numbers, and while the NFL's struggling, I mean, the Big Ten title game was one of the most viewed games this year, and it certainly lived up to the billing. So I think the interest is definitely there if they want to expand it, and I think it kind of then gives everybody a better picture of if these hot teams at the end are indeed the best team.
A pleasure as always. Thank you, Audrey. Appreciate your time very much.
No problem, Steve. You got it. Take care.
Audrey Snyder, DK Sports. Next half hour, Craig Meyer, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Rose Bowl will be on Monday, January 2nd. It'll kick off at 5 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll be on the air at 3:30 with the Dietz and Watson Tailgate Show. You know, of course, we have Santa Claus tonight for the ninth time already in this season. And also for the 84th year. Now, this is not a sports story, but I wanted to pass it along anyway because I think it's a really nice story. Santa Claus came to town and spent quality time with hearing-impaired children at a Miami mall on Tuesday. Dozens of children had a special holiday meeting with St. Nick at the Dolphin Mall, an annual event organized by the Signy Santa organization. The children get a chance to meet with Santa Claus, take a photo with him, and then sign what they want to Father Christmas, who signs right back. They also get to dance, play video games, have holiday-themed interactions with people dressed as Santa's helpers. Andy Altman is the organizer, told WSVN that this is the 17th year in a row that they've hosted the event at the Miami Mall. He says, we're going to continue to do the event every year. The Signing Santa organization has various events similar to that held in Miami, and they do it across the country now as well. That's really nice. That is really, really nice. Just thought I'd pass that along. I think that's really, really cool. Like, we have Santa Claus on all the time, every year, the Magic Radio, which is really, really nice.
It's really cool and very humbling for us as we go through the year and you talk to folks that have now their grandchildren, great-grandchildren, or have been on the show the last couple of years, and they remember back 40, 50, 60 years ago when they were on the show.
Yeah, well, that's,
this is really cool.
That's one of the many things that this is all about. That's one of the many things that this is all about. And it's one of the many, many reasons why I love being associated here. And I'm glad everybody enjoys it so much because I enjoy the fact that we do it. I'm just asking for Santa for more correct picks on Friday. I need something, Santa. How about, have you seen the commercials lately where the kid's sitting on Santa's lap and looking over at mom or dad? I want a Lexus.
Yes.
I want a
Then there's one where the couple's in the living room carving out their letter, and the kid wakes up, and the parents don't know what to do, so he kifes the letter from mom and dad, and he goes, and a puppy.
Oh, my goodness. No, I'm really glad we do that. I mean, that's, you know, it's 84 years. I mean, anything that can last that long on the air, and I think what you said is so true, where you have people who themselves as kids now get a chance to then have their children do it, then have a chance to have their grandchildren do it, then they have a chance for their great-grandchildren to do it, all in the same setting, the same radio station every year.
And thanks to the power of the internet now, we get letters from folks out of state, from even as far south as Florida and other places across the country, sharing their stories about when they were in the Magic Radio room when they were growing up, and they get a chance to tune in and relive their childhood. By,
that's great.
Oh, that just takes it to another level and makes us, you know, it's what, like what you said, it's what it's all about and another reason to keep it going.
It is. Well, it's, look, it touches people and it's fun. Well, there you go. I mean, you can sit there and you can give all the opinions you want on a show like this about, you know, about playing a zone blitz. Okay, there's an audience that's there for it. But at the end of the day, something that's fun and something that's touching, I love that.
Well,
I love
the fact that one of the reasons why we do what we do.
Yeah, you know, but I love the fact that we do it. I do. And, you know, the Needy Family Fund's another thing, and that's so important. The goal this year is $75,000, I believe.
And we are now up and over $20,000, so we're on our way.
So we have to keep that going as well, because there's so many families that benefit from this. And a lot of great stories surrounding it as to why there is a need for the Needy Family Fund. And this money stays in our area and goes directly to them. It's like making a donation directly to someone who needs help. So if you can do that, that'd be great. And be a part of that. So a lot of wonderful stuff going on this time of the year. You're saying it's a sports show. Shut up. I was like, okay. And we will get back to more sports in the final half hour. Where Craig Meyer, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I would also like any hints out there as to how to somehow defeat my brother. I mean, it's like facing, it's like sitting there facing William Tecumseh Sherman rolling through Atlanta going toward the sea.
Well, it's like you said, it's almost kind of unfair just with, you know, he has a little more free time to break down the games and come up with his picks and like you.
No. And then, you know what? That has nothing to do with it, okay? He's just done a better job than I have. Now, on the bowl thing, we'll have to consider whether the suit should be involved in it or not. He is the defending champion. But it would take him away from the movies. I mean, from digital media.
We may have to go 90 minutes. I just thought of that.
Well, you and I pretty much keep our picks short.
We try. I like to add to it when I can, though.
Yeah, I've been saying that about my role in this show for years.
Nothing to worry about there, contrary to popular belief.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Bozos of the day, pretty easy today. Police investigating a break-in and racist graffiti at the home of Giants player Nikita Whitlock's home. There was vandalized with KKK, a swastika, and racial slurs. The ignorant of society always need to be called out. That's a pretty easy one. It's even far more than being the sports bozo of the day. They are the ignorant of society. Big finish there. Love it. All right. Let's bring in Craig Meyer, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Penn State and Pitt will play basketball Saturday. The Never Forget Games doubleheader. It benefits 9/11 families. It'll be at the Prudential Center in Newark. The first half of the doubleheader, Villanova against Notre Dame at noon, Penn State against Pitt at 2:30. Craig, Pitt is 7-2. They've won four of those games by 5 points or less, including last night. Is that a sign that they know how to close games, or is it a sign of something else?
I don't know if it's so much a winning attitude necessarily. I mean, I think they're definitely helped by the fact that four of their five starters are seniors. I think in a whole bunch of those games, I think with the Marquette game being sort of an exception there. I mean, you know, you look at the Eastern Michigan game; they were largely in control of that one. Right. You know, and that one ended up going into overtime. We saw it last night with Buffalo. I mean, they were up by 26 in the first half, 16 early in the second half. I think, honestly, some of those maybe have more to do with them just letting teams back in the games in which Pitt was previously sort of in control of things. I think for them, that's almost sort of a more more discomforting stat, you know, in the fact that a whole bunch of these games that are pretty close have been to teams that they're better than from a talent standpoint, from a financial standpoint, if you look at the overall school. I think that they've, just for a team with four seniors on it, with each of those guys playing pretty big roles, two of them being their, by far, their two leading scorers, I think, I mean, this is a position that they shouldn't keep getting in, where they're in these close games that really shouldn't have been that close to begin with. So I think that's that. I mean, it's good that they're able to hold on and show some kind of fortitude or whatever character trait you want throw out there, but it's just the fact that they keep getting into these spots and games they controlled, I think for them has to be a little concerning.
Obviously, you mentioned and referenced the four senior starters. The one that's not is Cam Johnson. He's become the third scorer on this team. What do you like in his development?
He is, I think, by far their best outside shooter. That was something that people saw last year. Just during his freshman year, and he's a pretty interesting, kind of a study in player development and player growth. And that in high school, I think even during his junior year, he was about 6'2". Then just went, he was a lightly recruited prospect even at that point. And then he grew about 6 inches in the span of a year and a half. So you basically get a guy who has sort of the skill set of a smaller guard, more so of a two guard. He has a really nice, he has a great stroke. He's pretty good handling the ball. And then you and then all of a sudden with that, with the Grossberg there, you put him in a 6'8 frame. So it's really, he's somewhat, I don't want to call him a matchup nightmare, but he's a guy who's really tough to defend in the fact that you have to, you know, is it you either match a smaller defender on him, who even if the guy's cloaked over him, he's got a pretty sizable height advantage and he can just shoot over him, or you drag one of your bigger guys out and get him into a spot where he's not necessarily as comfortable or capable of defending. So I think, having a 6'8 guy who's shooting, I think close to about 40% or he's at 45% this year. I think that's a huge asset for this team.
Jamel Artis was suspended, for the Duquesne game, I believe. First of all, what kind of player has he become, and what kind of attitude does he bring to the floor?
As far as a player, I mean, he was a major question mark going into this year because they lost James Robinson, who was their four-year starter, right. That point guard, and there was no clear successor. And Jamel Artis ended up taking over that spot. You know, the guy, his first 3 years, he's a 6'7", plays small forward mostly. So I think some people were a little dubious of how this whole thing would go. There's still people who express concern and disappointment with him, but he's been great, from that spot so far. He's averaging, he has team high in assists at 3.6, so only averaging about two turnovers a game. So I think if decision making were people's greatest concern with him taking over that spot, I think he's demonstrated that he's done a pretty good job. Attitude wise, he sort of, he's a very confident guy, probably something that you need. We talked to him last night. That was our first chance talking to him after he was suspended for the Duquesne game. And I asked him, what kind of lessons did you learn from that? Sitting on the bench there, being suspended, and your absence playing a big role, and you guys losing to a team that you never lose to. And he just said, I learned that I'm a pretty valuable guy to this team, that I'm pretty important. I don't think that's the lesson most fans wanted to hear, but he was certainly right. So he's a guy, you can sort of see that confidence and that sort of lack of doubt in his play. But again, so far, he's sort of utilized that well to where it doesn't get to a point of overconfidence or recklessness.
Michael Young. How good is Michael Young?
Right. He's a guy, he's worked a lot this year on, on kind of expanding his game out a little bit from the basket. For a guy his size, he's about 6'9". At the college level, he has as good of an outside jumper, especially from the mid-range, that I've seen from many players over the past few years. He's actually a really good post player too. He was somebody in high school and prep school who kind of would drift a little further away from the basket, but he has some great post moves, really nice touch around the basket. I mean, he's a guy, when you look at him offensively, you see him, even in just a brief glimpse, and you're like, okay, that guy with his offensive game, he's potentially a guy who will play in the NBA. But defensively, he's been a little bit more of a problem. I wouldn't necessarily say that he's kind of a turnstile for them down there, but he's a little inconsistent. He'll have these sort of inspired moments where a guy will come in and he'll swat his shot three rows deep. And then there are other times when they're playing teams like Eastern Michigan or playing Yale, and you see these guys who don't have the same level of talent getting to the basket fairly easily and not really having much of a rim protector in those spots, which Young, given his spot on the team, I mean, that's a role that he should probably be trying to inhabit. So I would say offensively, phenomenal player. Defensively, still a little bit of work to do.
Craig Meyer, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joining us. Kevin Stallings takes over this year. What kind of initial imprint have you seen on the team from him?
They seem a little bit looser, and that's certainly not a condemnation, of Jamie Dixon. I just think that he has a little bit different of a style. He's not someone, the second the things start to go south, where he calls a timeout, or if a guy takes a bad shot, he pulls him. But I think what you've seen is, you know, maybe a little bit more open of an offensive system. Defensively, they haven't been that great. I think that's been sort of one area where he's differed a little bit from Jamie. They play at a faster pace, which is something I think fans have enjoyed here so far. You know, like they're certainly not, you know, like a Loyola Marymount circa 1990, but they're still, you know, they're still going at a pretty good pace. And I would say mostly, yeah, you know, I think you see it mostly on the offense, and they're playing more zone, which is something, you know, Jamie's very, he's a very orthodox guy when it comes to his defense, always plays man-to-man. But I would say you see it mostly in terms of the freedom that his guys feel like they're afforded, which is saying that they, for all his success, didn't feel like they got under Jamie Dixon.
I have to ask you a football-related question. That's about James Conner.
Sure. Because,
I mean, you were privileged to be around him all the entire time. To see what he accomplished this year after everything he went through and now winning the Brian Piccolo Award, can you put into words, Craig, what the journey has been for him to get to this level where he played at a high level like he did?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a story that in some ways almost kind of writes itself. You know, you almost don't need too many adjectives, that shower all of this praise on, because you look at his body of work and what he's been able to do, and, you know, and it's incredible. If you strip everything else away and you just look at his stats from this season, it's impressive, except then if you tell somebody, okay, this is a guy who – you know, who last September, you know, tore his MCL in the first game of the season, which for a running back can be, in some cases, a devastating injury. And then 3 months later, at, you know, age 20, 21, finds out that he has cancer and battles back from chemo, able to go through all the treatments during that spring and yet still practices. I think it's a testament to his maturity, to his perseverance, really to the overall human spirit. What he's done with it is he's sort of wanted his message to resonate with others and inspire them, you know, and he's been someone that's gotten really involved for the past year or year and a half here doing community service, you know, reaching out to people who are also going through some kind of struggle. I mean, I think he's been, you know, something of an ideal role model, you know, not only for that program, but for college athletes.
I think there are very few stories in any sport that are better than that. I mean, it really must have been something to be around it all the time and see it happen the way it did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, when the year began, I think there were some doubts, you know, whether he would be able to get back to the point where he was, you know, the year before he got injured and got diagnosed with a Hodgkin lymphoma. I mean, he was the ACC Offensive Player of the Year. And you can see it took him a little while to kind of, for everything to totally come back, for the explosiveness, for the agility to, even with all the training that he had done. But yeah, to the end of the year, and that guy was consistently rattling off 100-yard games, and he looked like the James Conner of 2014, which, given all that he had gone through, is something that is pretty damn remarkable.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, he ended up with 1,060 yards, better than 5 yards a carry. By the way, what was it like to cover a 76-61 game? I mean, I've done that. in basketball. I've never done that in football.
Yeah, you had brought up basketball there. My favorite stat with it, yeah, there were a ton of them, but my favorite one was their combined points. I think it was, terrible math, that's why I got into journalism. It was 137 points total. And those 137 points were more combined points in a football game than Pitt and Syracuse had in 8 of their 10 basketball matchups. it was crazy. You know, there were fans who were, I guess, somewhat understandably upset. You know, they would say things like, oh, you know, this isn't football, this is an embarrassment, you know, Pitt's defensive players should be ashamed of themselves, which I think is something funny to try to tell a bunch of, you know, unpaid 22-year-olds that they should be ashamed of themselves. But it was one of the more bizarre things I've seen
You know, I don't think I grasped the full magnitude of it and the sheer craziness of it until after the game when you saw all these records that it broke. But it was incredibly fun to watch.
Hey, by the way, the Pinstripe Bowl does a first-class job of running it. They really do. And the matchup with Northwestern is going to be a really good one. So that should be a lot of fun coming up in a couple of weeks. Craig, thanks so much. I assume you'll be at The Rock on Saturday?
I will, yeah.
Good. Look forward to seeing you there.
Oh, great, Steve. We'll see you then. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for being on, Craig. Appreciate it very much. Craig Meyer, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, home stretch here, final few minutes before the company holiday party, excluding me, takes place. I hope everybody knows this is just a joke, right?
It is.
Okay. I hope everybody understands that. Yeah. I mean, there's certain things you do on the show. I got to explain this once in a while. There's certain things you do on the show that are part of the entertainment of the show. At least you hope it is. For example, making fun of the fact that they're going to have the holiday party tonight and I'm excluded. Well, I'm excluded because I'm working tonight. In other words, if it was not a Thursday night, for example, I would go. Or like on December 23rd. Now, let's face it, I'm not going to go to the station on December 23rd and then just turn around and drive home. I'm just going to be at the luncheon when I can do it from the comfort of my own home. And of course, I think, and I've tried to explain over the years about the, I think the suit is great and awesome, and we just have fun because it's just trying to have fun with the show. You know, and he's the first one to tell everybody that. Okay, like it's not meant to be anything except let's have some fun. So you take Kevin, you create almost like a mythical character of the suit. Some's true, some's not. Some of it is based in truth. I mean, you gotta admit, I mean he's a character beyond characters.
Mm-hmm.
He's the suit.
He is. And he'll be back on the radio with Dave Ritchie tomorrow and Saturday as Shikellamy Boys Basketball will be cranking up their season with a brand new coach. So looking forward to see how that shakes out as they get things going there.
Yeah, that should be terrific.
And of course, before you know it, Steve Williams will be Matt's side for Braves wrestling.
Yeah, how about that, huh? Get that rolling again. Steve does a great job, doesn't he? Great job.
And quite a few of the high school teams will be at the Top Hat and Williamsport tomorrow and Saturday.
Oh, okay. So it's, we're already getting that cranked up. Wow.
Yeah, it's been a tournament that's been happening in Williamsport there in the Hill. Oh, my goodness. When I was back in high school. So you're going 30-plus years back to the Lock Haven days prior to Central Mountain when Ben and Lock Haven merged to form that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It was more toward Christmas time, though. They moved it up a couple weeks
I thought that was a Christmas tournament.
It was. It was one of my first responsibilities in radio in 83 and 84. Lock Haven would be locked in that tournament over the weekend, and I'd pretty much just stay embedded in the studio and fire up the commercials in between the bouts.
Now look where you are.
I know. Now paired right, up with one of the best in the biz. And
well, I think Kevin appreciates you saying that.
That'll be a nice breaker for everyone now in the parking lot before they walk into the party.
Walking in now. Like, and again, when they walk in tonight at the restaurant in Lewisburg, when you start hearing people chant, suit, 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 suit. Right, really. If that doesn't tug at the heartstrings, nothing does.
Yeah.
And Wakeman just drove off the road. All right, so what?
Just have that lampshade on standby.
Stand by.
Can't break it out too early. Got to leave him hanging for a while.
Yeah, because he's afraid if he breaks out early, Roger will throw him out. I mean, Roger, to his credit, has perfected the, I don't see it. If I don't see it, it's not happening. Hey, you guys have a great time tonight. Have a refreshing beverage on me.
You betcha.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow with Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. And my brother with picks. He's going for the jugular. And my jugular is exposed. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.